You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I was just absolutely blown away by it. You know, as someone who has always been a fan of superheroes and, you know, strong female characters, you really can't get any better than Julien and Jai Long in this. Like, Jen, like, they're just phenomenal. So yeah, that's I think that's why I just loved it. It's a beautiful, epic, romantic, balletic, like, just choreographed beautifully.
I think it's really, really a remarkable piece of filmmaking, and it sort of speaks to the best of Ang Lee, who's a filmmaker I absolutely adore.
This is one of the greatest films ever made.
Hello, film fans. Joining us remotely today, we have Hannah.
Hello.
Layla.
Hi.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to review Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod. And on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello and welcome to FlixWatcher. Joining us today, we have Hannah and Layla. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, I'm Layla Latif. I am a writer, film critic, broadcaster. I work with Little White Lies, Curzon, Sight and Sound, Total Film, the AV Club, and I'm often on Radio 4 on the World Service, pal of Hannah's.
Pal of Hannah's, that's a great place to be.
Pal, that's, I love that. Yes, this is me, Hannah. the pal she's speaking about.
So what do you do, pal of Layla?
I love this. It feels a bit like a Superman thing. Pal of Layla.
would watch that.
Yes, that'd be great. Okay, let's work it out after this. I am Hannah Flint. I'm a film critic, writer, host, podcast host. I do the First Film Club podcast. I do the Fade to Black podcast, which is weekly reviews on Sundays. I'm a host on MTV Movies. And yeah, I kind of do reviews, features and interviews for BBC Culture, Empire Magazine, Guardian, as a columnist for Soho House and Big Issue.
Awesome. Tell us a bit about the Fade to Black podcast.
It is myself, Amon Warman, and Clarice Lockery. They're both, if you don't know, they're critics, then wise up, you should. And we have a nice kind of chat, chin wag, about the weekly releases. And we finish it off with a hot take section, which are always quite spicy. So it's really fun, and it's kind of, we don't really take ourselves too seriously. Actually, sometimes we really do. We get very passionate. Amon got very passionate about Uncharted in that episode, so look out for that. And every now and again, we have an interview. So we had Jonas Poel Rasmussen, who directed Flea. He had Denzel Washington on recently.
Crappy guests.
Big names.
Michael B. Jordan.
So yeah, come on down, join us.
I do like hot takes. I think that's one of my favourite parts of your show, where you wail in on a subject matter which is often topical, but sometimes just something that's, is evergreen. Like spoilers, the spoilers one, for example. I remember that when Amon was like, don't spoil anything ever. And you were like,
I mean, you can go and listen to that. I can't remember what episode that is, but it was
quite early on.
What's the statute of limitations on spoilers? And I suppose also where, you know, well, if you're online, okay, what we like, if you're watching like Boba Fett, you know, it goes out at the same time across the world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's 8 a.m. here, it's midnight in the US, whatever. So it's all different times. So the idea is, like, if you don't want to get spoilers from that thing, just don't be on Twitter. No one's forcing you to be on Twitter. No one's, like, unless you're a social media manager and you're getting paid to be on there. I just kind of feel like, yeah. So there was I have some very, Amon didn't necessarily agree with me.
I have a very slim tolerance for spoilers. I was on Mon's side.
Right. I assume you have me on mute.
No, just like things for when Spider-Man came out.
I think the rule is if it's in the trailer, it's fair game, no?
Absolutely.
But like, you have people who take it so far. Like, someone once, like, had a go at me because there was a picture of Ahsoka Tano, you know, Rosario Dawson as her. And like, anyone who's seen Clone Wars knows what she looks like. So, you know, you're pretty sure it's going to be exactly the same. And someone's like, someone literally went really with her. It's like, you've just ruined it to me. It's like, I ruined The Mandalorian for you. That has ruined your entire experience because you now have confirmation that Ahsoka Tano looks exactly the same as she does in The Clone Wars. You know, we're just like, that's at point moments where I kind of do really lose my patience and just think, get a life.
I'm on your side in that case. What's she called? Jane, the person. No, we're here talking and spoiling. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. This came out 20-odd years ago. Was it 20 years ago?
2000.
Holy shit.
22 years ago.
22 years ago. So the statute of limitations is well beyond the pale.
Yeah, if
here.
You've not seen it now and it's like...
Yeah. And you're listening to this, then yeah, absolutely.
Well, pause this, go watch it and then come back.
Yeah. Hannah, tell us first of all, why did you choose it and the synopsis in 60 seconds or less?
So I chose it because I think when we talk about like breathtaking, slack-jawed, just eyes wide with amazement, cinematic experience, that's how I felt going to see this. I mean, it's 2022, so I'm 33, so I must have saw this as like 11, 12-year-old going in. I was just absolutely blown away by it. I think, you know, as someone who has always been a fan of superheroes and, you know, strong female characters, you really can't get any better than Julianne and Jay Long in this. Like, Jen, like, they're just phenomenal. So yeah, that's I think that's why I just loved it. It's a beautiful, epic, romantic, balletic, like, just choreographed beautifully. Yeah, it's a whole world that I had not really seen before.
So can you tell us the synopsis?
The synopsis. So it's based on the Chinese novel of the same name by Wang Dulu. It's set in early 19th century China during the Qing Dynasty. And it kind of follows renowned swordsman Li Mubei, played by Chow Yun-fat. He decides he wants to give up his legendary green destiny sword. He's kind of wants to get enlightenment, but he kind of realizes actually the reason why he can't get it is because he still loves Michelle Yeoh's Julianne. So they're kind of like in this unrequited, well, it is requited, but they've kind of held back by, you know, culture, propriety and all that. But then what happens is that the guy that he gives the sword to, well, someone comes and nicks it. This cheeky little bugger comes in and nicks it. And that basically sets off a kind of chain of events that throws the lives of these warriors, the kind of aristocrats and some lurking criminals into flux. So yeah, it's got a lot going on.
Awesome. Helen, Layla, thoughts on Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
I love Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon so much. And I also love that I feel like this is the prototypical Hannah film. Like, this is like all of the stuff that she likes. If you were going to ask me to guess, you know, what she would have chosen. But yeah, I think it's really, really a remarkable piece of filmmaking. And it sort of speaks to the best of Ang Lee, who's a filmmaker I absolutely adore. He's got, you know, it's like all of the best of the unrequited, buttoned up, well, I suppose unrequited isn't the right word, the kind of repressed emotions of like Broadback Mountain or Sense of Sensibility, but then kind of with like, and I suppose it must be going to his, to his childhood, the films that he grew up watching, because this sort of magical realism fight scenes, that was maybe new to Western audiences, but that is not new to the kind of cinema of China. And it's just the most kind of beautiful melding of the two. And I think this is just a really spectacular and really moving film.
Helen.
Yeah, it's just so beautiful. I think I saw it at the cinema and I hadn't revisited it. And watching it again, I was like, why have I not watched this more times? Because there's just so much beauty in it. And I hadn't really remembered that much of the romance. I was like, this is completely a romance thing. Like, I think before maybe I was just kind of taken away with the martial arts and them flying through the trees, that I just thought it was all about that. But I really enjoyed revisiting it. And it's just really great. And the first fight is like two women having a fight. It's like, yes, this is the women. They're fighting. They're the best. Yes, absolutely. So yeah, it was a real pleasure to come back to this one.
Yeah, I think I've only seen it a couple of times. I do have the DVD. And I remember this being, I think the way I heard about it first was, oh my God, guys, this is a foreign language film that might win the best picture Oscar. And I was like, why is that a story? Can they not win anyway? And I think it was Gladiator that won this year or something like that. I can't remember which one it was. But if it was Gladiator, I'd much prefer it to be this than the Gladiator, even though I do really enjoy Gladiator. Big martial arts guy, generally, myself, and this kind of blew me away. And then you had a few more kind of imports. You had House of Flying Daggers and Hero coming to the UK, being more prominent. And, you know, I was all for that. And then they kind of just stopped, didn't they? Yeah, I think this is fantastic. It's just,
I don't know if they stopped. It's interesting. I think maybe it was just that, because I think one of the things I saw recently, which was beautiful, was at the Toronto Film Festival in 2018, Shadow, which I think is on Netflix, Zhang Zhimu. And that is breathtaking, epic. I think then you had like the Grandmaster with Tony Leung. Like, I think they have been there, but I suppose it's that one's in a way the same. I suppose it's the same thing as we talked about with Easy A, you know, specific genres, sensibilities kind of change, and then you end up having certain films that people want to make and sure things like, you know.
So, I mean, with action films, and if we're talking about action films, now it's more the one begets the other, don't they? So The Matrix begets Romeo Must Die, and they become really popular. And now we're in the kind of John Wick, more kind of realistic phase of fighting and nobody and stuff like that. I mean, these kind of films should certainly still be in circulation because they are amazing. But I can understand why they kind of, you don't see them as much in the UK at least, or maybe in Western realms.
I think they're really hard to do. I think those long take, highly choreographed fight scenes are really, really difficult to pull off. And I really noticed it because I know that the fight choreographer for this was also the fight choreographer for the original Matrix films, but not the most recent one. And I think you really missed it in the most recent one. Like, I noticeably saw it that, like, you know, we've actually really regressed with the most recent one, in, you know, away from this sort of amazing balletic choreography that, you know, and that moment in this film where they say that, you know, fencing is like calligraphy, and you feel that in the film, like this is artistry.
Yeah.
I hear that. I was reading it somewhere that she spent almost as much time doing that calligraphy sequence as she did, like learning some of the martial arts moves. It's that kind of intricate nature too.
And I think what I love about this film, so, you know, Cheng Pei-Pei, who plays Jade Fox, she has a storied career in as like a fighter. Michelle Yeoh, she's an absolute legend. And what I think why I admire, you know, Zhang Yu says, she's just, again, amazing, kind of, and then she comes out again, like, in House of Flying Daggers and several other films, and you're just like, oh my God, this woman's just phenomenal. But then obviously she can also do drama because she did Women Must Love the Geisha as well. But I think, you know, the work is there. This is not, like, this isn't stunt people. This is them actually doing the action. I think one of the things that, you know, they said was I suppose there's so much talk about, like, in the sense of just the world, it's a very practical effect. It's like, when you look at some of the the kind of scenes, where whether it's, you know, I don't know, by a waterfall, it's in like a kind of desert, like you feel that these people are actually there. It looks that way. And so a lot of the CGI stuff was just taking away the wires for the wire food bits.
Yeah.
But like, you see them doing all the moves, and it's just like, that is an action hero. That is someone not only, but a professional martial artist. That's why it's called an artist. Like, and you just, no shade to kind of our Western, you know, stunt people. I think Sophie Boutello is probably one of the best Western, but she's like French Algerian. I mean, I've seen her in Hotel Artemis. She's amazing. But, you know, there's not that expectation on, say, Brie Larson in Captain Marvel. You know, that expectation, even like some of the fighters in, that's why Shang-Chi was so amazing, because again, that's how they basically celebrated everything that's come before. Like, you know, whether it's, you know, Jackie Chan using his kind of physicality when it's in the... We're talking about Shang-Chi now. I feel like we're not talking enough about Crouching Tiger.
I hated Shang-Chi, full disclosure.
Let's not talk about this. Let's not talk about change. We might not be pals anymore.
Well, it doesn't have the practical beauty, the place in the world, the natural light, the gorgeousness of this. I felt that that felt very green screened in comparison.
It was.
Yeah. And then you look at Crouching Tiger and it's just like, it's just stunning, visually beautiful. And, you know, as you said, I think you said, Layla, like, it's interesting. And what you said about like Oscar nominations as well. I mean, if you look back at the history of how many foreign language films have actually been nominated to best film, it's like there's barely any. Yeah. I think like The Grand Illusion was like the first one. Back in like the 30s, and then since then I think there's been like prior to Crouching Tiger's release in 2000, there was only about seven in the space of however many decades, like 100
Eight
years
decades,
or
yeah.
70 years. But what was amazing, that this film picked up 10 nominations and it won in exactly places that it definitely should have won, like best cinematography. I mean, talk about some of the fight sequences. The one where Jen's kind of escaped and she's at a restaurant and she's got about 10, like 100 guys. Just the fluidity through which the camera just takes you through like the building. You'll never lose sight. You know exactly, you see every single move. Nothing is lost. Like no frame is dropped. Like you see everything that you're supposed to see. And then even, you know, when it's kind of like them flying over the rooftops, it's just, I would want those situations where I'm like, do I want to see how the sausage is made? Because it looks so magic, but I could love, in a way, it's like, I'd love to see just how they achieved it because it is like award worthy. It's just so brilliant.
The scene when I was watching, well, a few weeks ago, I watched The Great Muppets Caper and you had all the Muppets.
Sorry, I love that we've gone from
another classic to...
But bear with me a second, but you had all the Muppets cycling, riding bikes in Battersea Park. And I was just watching thinking, what? How the actual fuckery have you done this? Yeah. And then this is the same thing that came up again when I watched Crouching Tiger, when they're in the bamboo. If you think logistically, how do you get the cameras up there and have these people dancing around in the bamboo and standing on the thing, poising? And it's them.
And Chow Yun Fat being serene in the bamboo whilst dangling from wires.
Yeah. And just one thing to point, Michelle Yeoh was in, her knee was in really bad shape. So there are, particularly the fight with her in the house with Jen, it is someone else doing the wide shots because she just couldn't do a lot of the things, but still she's doing the close-up, which is still like way better than most people could do. And it's still, that's one of my favorite fight scenes just generally.
I think her chasing though, women. I think that's the best one, where the original thing where she's chasing them. I mean, just mad. Like she's like, I'm just going to run up this wall. I'm going to grab this rock and chuck it. And it's just the editing of that. So you see it. Like that's, again, editing on this was done like just like so precise and just like, yeah, you get every snap. Like you think it's in the dagger and you just like go, and you're like, oh my God, did it hit?
It's more like dancing than fighting because it's so beautiful to watch. And there are some slightly more violent bits in which I'd completely forgotten. But for most part, it's just beautiful. And the kind of, when they're fighting in the trees is just, it's so mad because like, how do you fight in trees like that when they're all kind of like bending and moving?
I will say, I think House of Flying Daggers has the superior fighting trees with the bamboo. That's an amazing fight sequence. But
yeah, I felt that they moved a bit like how I fly when I'm in dreams, if that makes sense. It was kind of not, it's kind of the weird like floatiness when you're kind of flying in a very strange way in a dream. I always feel that if kind of Mulholland Drive catches nightmares, for me, this film catches dreams.
That's such a really wonderful way of putting it.
Both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Did you also notice like the absence of sound, like the silence as they moved? And I think that also adds to the dreamlike quality to it because, you know, if it was John Wick, you'd be hearing every hit or like every step on the rooftops. It'd be like so loud. Whereas this, that's what you're kind of like, I'm witnessing. My eyes can't quite comprehend what I'm seeing because the logic in me was like, they would make a sound, but because they're warriors and they're trained in the way of Wudan, like, I mean, Michelle Yeoh's not trained in Wudan, bloody fucking patriarchy. But like, you know, it's like that. Which is
always the patriarchy.
No, it is. And I think that's what's also so, like, sorry to segue into something else, but like the gender politics and the feminism within this film. And like, how, like, you know, Chow Yun-fat, sure, he's the main guy, but like, it's all women like that we care about, even whether it's Jay Fox being the bad, you know, the bad woman, but you can kind of even sympathize with her. It's like, yeah, girl, I get it. Like, man did not cheat you. And then, you know, this kind of, I, you know, you were saying earlier about like later about how like there's a, I suppose like a kind of a through line through Ang Lee's movies that, you know, the idea of kind of being repressed. And I think in a way for me, I see Crouching Tiger and Sense and Sensibility, his other, you know, kind of polite society class kind of film, then being two sides of the same coin, because, you know, I forgot about like how much like the kind of sisterly relationship there is on there. And like, whereas, you know, Jen is like Marianne, kind of this like, I just want to be free and I want to do this, an impulsive person. And Michelle Yeoh is like, she's more like Eleanor, you know, she's got, she loves, I can't remember the character's name, but you're like, she loves like, is it Edward?
It's a Hugh.
Yeah, the Hugh Grant. You know, they love each other, but they can't do it in the same way. Like, you know, Lima Bay and Shilin, they love each other, but they can't. And I think it's so interesting how actually something can be set in like England, like Jane Austen, can have as much in common. I think that just shows what Ang Lee is looking for as a filmmaker as well, to kind of talk about these things that are also universal. I think Ang Lee has, the reason why this film did so well is because it managed to entrance Western audiences, bring them in. I mean, there's a lot of elements to this that probably isn't traditional to Wuxia cinema, but actually the kind of, I don't know, the grand scale of it kind of drew people in. And the idea that he's like really showing that the accessibility, like every culture is accessible. I think that's his kind of hallmark as a filmmaker. Like, he even, and even within this cast, they're all kind of, I mean, they're all of Chinese heritage, but actually they're all multicultural, yeah. from Malaysia, from China, Hong Kong,
Taiwan,
you know, Taiwan. Like, yeah, it's just, he's wonderful.
I was reading up about it, and apparently it's like the difference between someone from Newcastle speaking to someone from Belfast, speaking to someone from like London, but to our untrained ears, like it's the same, but to like someone from Southeast Asia, this is like, guys, what's going on here?
I mean, you would know about this, Layla, because I think you, because you're an Arabic speaker, and like I'm trying to learn Tunisian Arabic, which is slightly different, just dialectical is different. And you know, what would you say? Would you say that you're, is Egyptian Arabic you kind of learn? You know,
Egyptian Arabic is the one that's kind of easiest for people to kind of understand. I speak with a Sudanese Arabic accent, which is quite similar to Iraqi accent, and I think that would be kind of the Geordie Shore in terms of like classiness, in terms of the Arabic accent world.
Oh no, Sudanese.
Oh no. You are pronouncing those K's very hard. I think I read that actually Michelle Yeoh had to learn her lines phonetically, because, which is insane how kind of elegant her performance is, given, can you imagine kind of having to like recite the line phonetically and not actually, you know, kind of live it and breathe it with the way that she kind of so seamlessly does. And
but I suppose she knows what it means though, doesn't she? She knows, she might not know what the word stands for, but she knows the sentiment, she knows what she's supposed to be saying. So I get what you mean, but I think she probably was able to deliver it.
Anyway, I refuse to not be impressed.
You said it with the intro, Hannah, that Chow Yun-fat is falling in love with Michelle Yeoh, and how could you not? Because Michelle Yeoh is, she's the GOAT, really, isn't she? She's absolutely amazing. Every single thing she does, she's like.
But it's also not Aaron Sorkin doing the script. Do you know what I mean? Like, what I've noticed a lot about, like, especially kind of East Asian cinema is it's like it's quality, not quantity, when it comes to dialogue, definitely. And it's kind of like the least needs to be said, and I love that. Because it's, again, it's a visual language is telling the story as much as any dialogue could.
Well, that's what that calligraphy scene, for example, was when Jen gave herself away, wasn't it? It's like, oh, I know who you are now. I can see you write the same way you you wield a sword. Guys, is there anything else we want to say before we head to the scores?
Just I think that maybe Hannah's onto something with this kind of East Asian cinema being so good at longing. Because of that restraint with the script, like, there is kind of something like really beautiful in like all of these moments between various characters where so much is being left unsaid, but you still feel it.
Mm. Mm. I love one of the favorite dialogue scenes was the when Jen's in the in that bar and all those guys are coming up to her, saying, I'm Jeff Longsword from Volleyball. And she's like, oh, for fuck's sake, just what do you want? And then it will pile into her. And that kind of setup before the fighting started was actually a really strong piece of comedic writing. And then the whole fight scene afterwards was hilarious when she just dispatches with them like effortlessly, as we talked about that scene before.
I think what I like about the film as well is the fact that it's got this sense of humour. There are some kind of like, you've got the kind of like, I don't know, the Joker, I don't know, jester sort of character, the kind of security guard. He's like, I mean, the bit where the kind of the police officer who's come with his daughter to try and get the Jade Fox and they're all running and he doesn't realize he's been tied to the back. It's just hilarious. I think it's great. And then also I think, you know, I love the scenes with Lo and Jem where they're fighting and they're like so tired that she's hit him and she can't physically keep going because I've been rolling on the desert and sand. I think that's what it's got. You know, I think what makes it's a serious film, but it gives you that relief, you know, that light relief. And I think that's what makes these kind of like, especially, I mean, this is a tragic, feels like an epic poem, isn't it? I think it's very, it's very, you know, Chinese. You can feel it in its bone, or East Asian, Taiwanese. Like you can feel, it feels like these stories are timeless and both ancient, but also really contemporary as well. And I think why it's so good is the balance of all those different ideas and imagery. You know, you've got the Chambara kind of like Western sort of thing going on when they're getting attacked. Like that felt like, oh, this feels a bit like John Wayne. And I wonder if that's also a way that kind of Western audiences really could like recognize that. That could have been like, I don't know, Arizona, you know, like just the look of it. But yeah, there's just, he just knows he's got all these different things going on, the combination, like the composition of it, just outstanding.
Well, let's head to the scores, guys.
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have included fellow Stripped Media family members Martin and Sam from Song by Song, and Kobe from Flixwatcher, and Dave from The Wire Stripped. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome to the Flixwatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Hannah, with your recommendability.
5. Like 100% 5. This is one of the greatest films ever made.
Layla.
I'm going to go with a 5 as well. I mean, I don't meant to be like that curmudgeon, but like I really feel watching a lot of contemporary action films and watching this, you see that something has been lost, like a level of skill, a level of kind of like grounding things in the practical world around you. And like, I just feel like this is like a really extraordinary piece of work and something that I want us desperately to return to.
Helen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably maybe an over-reliance of CGI and we'll kind of like add that in later, or I don't know, this just kind of feels that every detail was kind of like thought about and nothing was, you know, we have to get it like this. And I imagine it was quite a sort of strenuous thing to put together. And it doesn't look like it's an easy film to do.
If you read what Ang Lee said about it, he was like, for 8 months, I was like depressed. I hated it. Like he had a terrible, like it was the worst time of his life. And it's like, it makes me so sad. Like he went through all this trauma to give us this beautiful thing.
But it's just definitely something was kind of like captured at that particular point. And it feels like it's almost sort of been encased within its own thing. And it's just a really, really beautiful piece of filmmaking. And there's probably like people say, oh, well, you know, it's subtitled, blah, blah, blah.
You know, it's subtitled.
Just think you need to get over that, you know, if you haven't seen this, then like 100% you have to watch it. And if you've, like me, saw it like years and years ago and haven't rewatched it, then rewatch it again, because it's still as beautiful. And it's probably even more impressive now when we've kind of seen where cinema's gone, but it's not kind of surpassed this in terms of sort of its beauty and the fighting. So I'm a 5 as well.
Yeah, I'm a touch lower because I know people who just like, oh, go and see it, subtitles. But still 4.8. Amazing. And
what's the point too? Is that just because of the subtitles?
Because people be like, I can't. And I know those people, but I can't be asked to have that discussion with those people.
For those 0.2 of people, fuck you.
But I think this is one of the things that I love most about what it's brought to cinema generally, because there's a phase of the Jason Bourne type of fighting, which is actually nauseating because you don't know who's hitting who from which angle and what's happening. But then it took a step back to one reason I really like John Wick is because you see the wide shots, you see everything that's happening.
But I think I will say this. I know we say the Jason Bourne thing, but I think there's a very different way of that. Like, I think it was on the second film, was it Paul Greengrass? But the first one wasn't. But like,
no,
yeah. It's how they basically copied it and not executed it in the same way. Because mm-hmm. I get what you're saying. Like Liam Neeson, every single one of his bloody movies, like it's like 11 cuts just to climb over a bloody fence, because it's like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're not getting that. Mm. And I think sometimes that claustrophobic element is actually really brilliant way of showing a fight scene within an apartment building, because you get that. Do you know what I mean? Like the Daredevil, where like they're doing the corridor scene and how
it just was a locked up camera.
Pardon?
Well, in Daredevil,
you know, the corridor scene where he's kind of fight through. I mean, even Hotel Artemis as well has a corridor scene where it's like trying to navigate through that. And it's, I think those claustrophobic, I think there's a space for that. Even like the raid.
No,
the
but raid that's what. Well, that's what I mean. Well, that locked off
but
scene.
But the editing is not. They're not cut.
Yeah, exactly. What I mean. So in that scene in Daredevil, there was just a locked off shot down the corridor, and it was a continuous shot, and you could see everything that was going on, people bouncing in and out, and there wasn't any cuts, in at least obvious cuts. And that to me is like the pinnacle of doing. You show that people have worked in the choreography. You can see that you know, at some point Charlie Cox, you know, at least faking it, he was like really breathing because he's worked his ass off for a minute in this scene.
Yeah.
But it's the quick cutting bit that I find disturbing with the Paul Greengrass Bourne stuff. And that's what you don't see with John Wick.
I haven't seen the Daredevil one, but is it a bit like the one in Old Boy with the hammer?
It's looking down the corridor rather than like a cross section of it, but it's still really cool though. It's still a really, really cool
shot. I just think I remember maybe that differently. I remember that the style was then copied and repurposed by other filmmakers trying to replicate it.
Mm.
And because their action stars don't have the skill to do it and they don't have it, that created the editing. And then suddenly that became the new style, and it gets basically born, has been labeled with it, even though actually that was the one that's done really well, whereas they've done a like drugstore version of it.
Yeah.
Maybe I just need to go rewatch Bourne. Is it on Netflix?
I mean, it's still decent.
It's going to be on like ITV, like any night.
Yeah.
I've
got it.
Repeat viewing score. Let's go back to the scores. Hannah, repeat viewing score.
I think in a way, like once you have it, I don't think you'd want to watch it immediately after. I think you need to let those things set in. But yes, you can actually, if you repeat, I'd probably say 4.5 repeat viewing.
Layla.
I'm going to go with maybe about a 4 in terms of repeat viewing. What I found myself doing over the years is actually just kind of YouTubing clips as they come into like my mind. I'll just want to watch the bamboo bit or the bit in the restaurant or stuff like that. Because just even those moments can kind of like reignite in me like a real like love of cinema rather than sitting down and watching the entire thing. I do think it is wonderful. I'm really glad I had a reason to sit down and focus with it. But yeah, 4.
Helen.
I can't believe it's taken me this long to revisit it. I don't really know why. Maybe availability, but I had it on DVD for years. So weird. I think I probably will watch it again. I'm not sure how soon. Maybe another gap of 20 odd years. I don't really know. A 3.5.
We'll see you here in 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, anniversary watch.
Yeah, I'm same as Helen. I haven't this is second or third time watching it in 20 years, which is, no, definitely at least, definitely three times, but maybe I don't think more than that. Should watch it more, but now I'm like mad keen to watch Hero and House of Flying Daggers again. Unfortunately, I don't have a DVD player at the moment, otherwise I'd just reach across to yourself, Hannah, and take it from behind your, on your shelf. So I'm going to go for three, I think. Small screen score. Oh, interesting. Hannah, small screen score for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I mean, do I get the same sense of awe that I did when I saw it? Like, do you need to see this in a cinema? 100%. Like, that is the ideal version of seeing this film. Did watch it again last night, filling me with much joy and just like amazement. Yes. I actually think this is what, and I think it goes back to what you're saying, like, Layla, about like, there is so, like, every aspect of the filmmaking, whether it's production design, choreography, acting, cinematography, direction, or every bit of it is to such a high level. It's like just, yeah, it's like firing on all cylinders that you can watch this and it still looks amazing. Like there hasn't been, it hasn't degraded in over the years in 20 years time. And even on a small, like a screen, I mean, I've got a pretty decent TV, but it just looked phenomenal. And I was just kind of still like, again, like some of the shots where you have the backdrop where it's just like open space, or even just the framing of certain scenes where I've sat having tea. It's just beautiful to look at. So yeah, I'm going to go maybe like 4.8.
Layla.
I'm going to go with a 4.5 because I think actually watching it on a TV, like it almost became a slightly different film for me. So where I was kind of coming for the gorgeous action sequences, I kind of found myself more engrossed in the like gender politics and like the kind of tragic romance of it all, because I wasn't, you know, too concerned with like the spectacle of it all. And like another layer and a load of really interesting things to me and stuff that I really love generally about Ang Lee's filmmaking came out. And I was reminded of his film Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, which is, you know, one of my favorite romantic comedies. And I think it was, you know, where you maybe lose in action, you'll find yourself just being completely transported into, you know, the incredible performance of Chow Yun-fat.
How is he still sexy though with like half his head shaved and his long ponytail?
What was your score there, Layla? Sorry?
Oh, 4.5.
4.5. Helen?
So apparently on that, with his hairstyle, apparently he had to be shown like a computer rendering of what he'd look like with that hairstyle before they'd let him shave it off. He was like, I need to see this so you can have a look.
I need to still, if I still look hot. It's like, yes, I approve.
I think I agree with you, Layla, about it being a different, it's almost like a different film watching it in a small screen than it is the big screen, because I remember seeing it at the cinema and it just sort of like blowing my eyeballs away. And this would have been like after The Matrix as well. So this time around watching it on a small screen, I felt that I was more involved in the story. So I think if you've not seen it before, then do try and see it in the cinema or, I don't know, the massive screen that you can find, because watching it on a small screen, you might be like, this is kind of all right. Whereas you want it to be like, wow, this is amazing. So I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen this in the cinema, which is silly. That's an oversight. And I do. So I'm going to give it a slightly lower score because I really want to see it in the cinema. And I think that fight between Jen and Michelle Yeoh's character, I can't remember her name right now.
Julianne
in the, when Julianne's running out of all the weapons, I remember that track, and I'm sure I think I've watched this in isolation, so maybe later you can confirm it for me when you've watched the scenes in isolation, but the score at that point is like immense. And I think I'd love to see that in the cinema and have all the sound envelop that scene as well, that section as well. Small screen score, 3.5. Engagement score, Hannah.
God, I feel like I was utterly wrapped.
Well, we're talking about you. This is your.
Yeah. I felt really engaged. I mean, I didn't feel distracted at all. You know, as someone who always goes to my phone, like I was like in it to win it. So I'm going to go, but then I can also understand again, like, I think it's both going back to what you said, Kobe, about like subtitles, but then I think that's why you need to be engaged because you're going to miss things. There's not a lot of dialogue. And if you miss one, you might miss some really juicy idioms. thrown in there. So I don't know. Okay. 4.7?
Sure.
I'm just like giving you a random number here. I'm like, I don't know who I am.
It's what you feel. Layla.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the Bong Joon-ho quote, which I am probably misremembering. Yeah, once you overcome the 1-inch tall barrier of subtitles, there's a whole like new world ahead of you. So, I mean, I don't mind subtitles at all. I actually think they kind of sometimes keep me more engaged mm-hmm. because I can't like half watch. So yeah, for me, the 4.5, like I find it really engrossing and it's very poetic and lyrical and you can kind of, you know, just kind of almost look at it as like an art piece and it's quite transfixing. So yeah, 4.5.
Helen?
I like that art piece. It is a bit like that because there isn't that much dialogue and a lot of what happens is unspoken that you can kind of like drift around in it and you can kind of like get what you want with it without having to be continuously reading all the time. And it's not one of those that it's not like any twists or anything. So if you kind of miss something, you don't need to go, oh, I need to go back. So yeah, I'm going to have 4.5 as well.
I'm going to go for 5. yeah.
Kobe.
Absolutely.
Wow. Was not expected. There you go. There's a plot twist.
Screwing over that 0.2% of people. They're furious now.
But I think exactly. But I think it's that piece that with any subtitle film or TV, there is that extra level of engagement you need to have. And I think sometimes that does stop you because if you're feeling a bit tired or just need something to chill out to a bit, it doesn't really help. And one of my favorite TV shows at the moment is Call My Agent, French TV show. And I just can't barrel through it because I'm just like I'm just a bit too tired to really get it.
Watch subtitles after a certain time. It's like I'm like an old person. It's like, not after 6. It's like, if I'm at home on my own, I really, really struggle. I have to like, okay, crack open the Diet Coke, Hannah, we're going in.
little sticks to open your eyes.
Yeah, like Malcolm McDowell in like Clockwork Orange. Like,
But once you started, then it does hook you in. And I had to watch this in a few different sittings, but each time it's like, oh yeah, this is great. This is great. 5 in total. That gives us an overall score of 4.39375. Boom.
That's good.
Hefty.
I feel like you brought the average down, Kobe, and I will never forgive you.
I didn't bring it down slightly with the recommendability.
3.5. That 4. Brought
no,
it down.
No, overall.
Because we're all in the fours. No one below. It's fine. I'll never come back on. It's okay.
It's still not a high overall score. Over 4
made
is amazing.
A powerful enemy.
Come on, Flinty.
I'll get my green destiny out on you, mate.
So, Hannah and Layla, can you tell everyone who's listening where we can find you online? And we'll say goodbye to the listeners.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. Don't tweet me, though, unless it's nice. At Hannah Flint. You can find me at Fade to Black Podcast, The First Film Club, Interview Movies. Empire, all the places that you read.
Layla.
I'm at all the places that Hannah doesn't write at, which is... we do overlap a bit. We're both BBC Culture, aren't we? But yeah, I'm Total Film, Little White Lies, Sight and Sound, AV Club. I guest host the Little White Lies podcast every now and again, so I pop up there. And yeah, Layla_Latif at Twitter, where I post everything that I write. But yes, like Hannah, only tweet me if you're going to be nice, because I am averse to discourse. Twitter.
Life's too short
for film Twitter discourse.
Thank you so much for that. It's been an absolute pleasure to rewatch this.
Thanks everyone. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.